Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hi, I'm Peter Hill, and this is the D-Word podcast, where we talk dementia. Welcome along to another D-Word podcast, where we like to keep up to date with the latest developments in science, which thankfully are now moving on at quite a rate. And my guest this week is Dr. Dan Blackburn from the University of Sheffield, where he's been working on an exciting project called CognoSpeak, which is a non-invasive way of diagnosing dementia using speech patterns. Well, Dan, it's great to meet you and have you my guest here on the D Word. Going to be talking about CognoSpeak, which has fascinated me from when I first read an article about it. But first of all, I mean, just let's tell us a little bit about yourself and you know, how you developed an interest in dementia as a subject.
Hi. Pete, it's great to be here with you. So I'm an academic neurologist, which means I do half-time research and half-time clinical medicine. My neurology interest is cognition, so I sort of lead and work in the Young Onset Memory Service in Sheffield. And you ask why I'm interested in dementia. When I was a teenager, I read the Oliver Sacks book, The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat, and the description of why a brain injury related to alcohol and they had a profound memory disorder. I also thought that's a very interesting subject, and it fits closely with sort of Alzheimer's disease because it's the same part of brain that's affected. So how do people get by with a really poor memory, and how does it affect the rest of their brain functioning?
Yeah, sure. CognoSpeak then, where does the idea come from?
Yeah, that comes from being a doctor, working in the memory clinic. We get referrals from primary care and other specialties. And it's a really difficult thing to know who to refer on to us in secondary care. And GPs are really, really busy. They don't have specific training on dementia or cognitive impairment. And they don't have access to really good tools. So the pen and paper tools work to some degree, but the GP's got to find them. They may not find them, file them. So we have thought about, is there a better way of doing this? And that it has to be suitable for all and accessible for all and retain accuracy. So language and speech requires a lot of cognitive processing. And it's been known for quite some years that people with Alzheimer's disease have impairments in language. For example, Ronald Reagan, when he went to his second term as being president of the USA, when they analyzed how he responded to questions to the journalists, there was decreased complexity in his answers that predated his diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease by 10 years. And so we thought if we could devise a tool that could probe those cognitive processes around language, that we could detect signs of cognitive impairment early and it'd be an accurate screening or stratification tool.
And it's at a very good time because, a number of drug trials, a number of hopes on the horizon in terms of drug treatments, but they all mean that you have to catch things early. And, that's exactly where you're aiming at.
Isn't it? It's a really exciting time to be a neurologist working in the field of dementia with lecanemab and donanemab being licensed in America. And we're waiting for decisions in Europe and in the UK. And there's more drugs coming on, which hopefully will get licensed and will prove to work. So you're right, we need to catch it at the really earliest stage. and the demand on our services is already high enough that we're struggling to cope. The waiting list is sort of between 0 and 104 weeks. You know, people are waiting 6 or 12 months to be seen. And we need to be able to find those who don't have any evidence, reassure them early, but pick up the really early stages and then do further, more invasive tests, because this is non-invasive, scalable and repeatable.
So, take us through it a little bit. How does it actually work?
Yeah, it's a good question. So the practicalities are that it's a virtual clinician, so a doctor on a computer screen. And on our current system, you can choose either a man or a woman, and they've got different ethnicities, so to make them more comfortable speaking to that clinician. But they ask the same questions, and they ask sort of conversational questions, predominantly designed to get as much speech as possible, describing what they're doing recently, what they were like at school. And then there's a few more sort of cognitive or neuropsychology tests, such as describing a picture. And on the back of the system, Heidi Christensen's a professor of computer science, and she's developed these software or codes that can analyze these speech patterns using both the acoustics, the sound signal about pause and errs in the speech, as well as the content of the speech for these earliest changes of cognitive impairment and dementia.
So it's not all about the words, it's about actual speech delivery, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important that we want to be able to analyse the words, but it's also the acoustics, how they produce the words and how quickly they produce the words as well.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
This is the D Word podcast, where I'm chatting to Dr. Dan Blackburn from the University of Sheffield about Cognospeak. And what's people's reaction of it? I guess you're sitting there with a laptop talking to a virtual doctor, if I can use that word. What's people's reaction been?
People quite like it because, sometimes it can be intimidating speaking to a neurologist. And also, some doctors interrupt people. They can do it from their own home. So the feedback has been really positive. Sometimes people get a bit worried when you describe it or you're speaking to a computer and people are like, oh, I'm not computer happy. But we say that, your husband or wife or daughter or son or friend can help you use the system. So the feedback overwhelmingly has been really good and positive.
And in terms of medical professionals that you've put in front of as well, I mean, I don't want to use the word in the industry, but you know what I mean. What's been the what's been the reaction there?
Again, really positive, because we know there are no clinicians. From the industry, the people working in memory services, like many people in the NHS, are struggling to meet the demand on our services, and we feel like we'd like to do better. And they see something like this, particularly so patient-friendly and non-invasive, has been a real positive. So we can allow the clinicians to do the time speaking to people once we've got a diagnosis. This isn't to replace clinicians, but it's to make us more efficient in our time and make the most of our time with patients.
I think that's a big message, isn't it? Because, you know, artificial intelligence, of which I guess this is kind of at the heart, has had some interesting press recently, let's put it that way. And I think that message is really important. You know, it's here to help us, not to take over from us.
Absolutely, yeah. This particularly in this system, the AI is a sort of supervised AI. We're understanding what are those speech patterns that make that can predict and diagnose cognitive impairment, but it's not replacing, it's just helping us work more efficiently, helping us work best for our patients.
And also, I guess it's explaining to people, or explaining to people, that sort of thin line sometimes between normal memory loss and something a bit more serious going on.
And that's a really clear message we want to get across. We've been looking in memory clinics. So ever since David Cameron and the G7 summit about this dementia, we need to diagnose people earlier with GPs and incentivized to refer on. In the younger population, sort of the under 65 memory clinics, about 45 to 50% of the people don't have any evidence of neurodegeneration. And like if you're anxious or you're depressed or you don't sleep very well or you're in chronic pain, you're not going to be able to sustain attention and your memory's not going to work very well. But that doesn't mean you've got early Alzheimer's disease. And if we can reassure people early enough that that's the case, find ways of managing that course of their memory problem, and that's going to be much better for them. And it'll free up time for the specialist to see the people with the early signs of Alzheimer's disease. You know, these are all patients we need to treat, but we need to, you know, having a poor memory isn't always due to something awful like a degenerative dementia.
And I think that's a big point as well, isn't it? Because, it's not just aimed at saying to people, yes, you have dementia or you haven't. It's also aimed at reassuring people, because when people worry about those kind of things, you know, they need treating as well. But I do get the feeling sometimes with the system, because everybody's rushed, it's, well, you don't have it. Thank you. And that reassurance is really important.
It's really important, isn't it? Like, you know, that sort of thing, either you don't have it, off you go, or you don't reach a threshold. Like, and I think it's important to say that in some memory services, if you don't reach a threshold for dementia, but you've still got cognitive impairment, those early stage patients will see, they're like, look, you're not severe enough to be seen. And actually we need to say, look, we should be seeing those people. We should be monitoring them, keeping an eye on them, as well as reassuring those other ones who are stable.
So, I undergo your test, I sit there, I go through it. What's the procedure afterwards in terms of, you know, I suppose it is getting a result, but, it's what happens after you've had your consultation.
Yeah, and that's right. So we are halfway through a 3-year project at the moment. Our existing data was to say that the cognitive was as accurate as the pen and paper test used in GPs. So we're collecting more people to prove that accuracy. But importantly, within this project, we're creating a report that can go to a GP as well, because they need to see the report. You know, more and more, we're going to be giving medical results to people. So we're going to develop a report that's meaningful for the different people who need to see it. And ideally reassuring people that, you know, if you don't have a memory problem, or let's say it suggests you've got a memory problem, then it would say, actually, you now need to see a specialist, but we can see you more quickly because this tool has helped to stratify people effectively. And what I see it from my point of view is that a GP would refer on, I would say, go to CommonSpeak first. The result come back to me, oh, there's signs of concern here. I would then pre-book some scans, you know, or other tests. And there's lots of new tests coming around dementia in terms of different brain scans, blood tests, cerebral spinal fluid tests. You can pre-book those. So therefore you, again, speeding up that process and access to diagnostic tests for the people who need it.
I mean, kind of, you know, simple medical terms for me, it seems it's kind of a triage system we're introducing here, isn't it? To, stop that massive great backlog of people that are in various areas and various stages.
Absolutely. Exactly right, isn't it? It's a patient-friendly triage system that can reassure people and get people seen by the right people at the right time.
Now, in terms of, we've talked about Alzheimer's, obviously there are a large number of types of dementia. Is it equally applicable to other types, or?
Yeah, at the moment, we've been looking, I think the important thing work is we've included people with functional cognitive disorder, those people who have got chronic pain or anxiety that affects their memory. So we've got a proper control group rather than people who are self-declared as healthy. We are just starting to collect other patient populations. So we're collecting data from people who've had a stroke, cognitive impairment, vascular dementia. We're looking at people with Parkinson's disease that can be complicated by dementia. And I think those rarer cases of dementia, such as frontotemporal dementia, two of them have got a very distinctive language type. So primary progressive aphasia, where you get an agrammatic sort of stuttering, slow speech, is really uncommon. So, you know, a GP may never see a case in their life, but actually I think a computer would recognize that more quickly. So we're looking to see whether we can really get a larger number of people with frontotemporal dementia. And I think they should be able to pull those out and say, actually, this looks very much like primary progressive aphasia.
Yeah, I think, in terms of the technology of it, I guess it just works on a normal laptop or works via an app.
Yeah, at the moment we're running it, but what's best on a laptop, Google Chrome. We have got it working on an iPad, but not other tablets, purely because of the amount of cost we'd need to manage all the different software updates. But mainly a laptop's good because you are the same distance from the screen and microphone at all times. Whilst with tablets and or phones, when we get to it, by moving your phone further and closer to your mouth will affect that voice signal and may affect some of the analysis of it.
Yeah, and I guess also one thing I think I read about it was you did some work that people would prefer talking to a head and shoulders rather than talking to a whole body type, which seems interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting, isn't it? And that's sort of, a lot of people get used to speaking to Siri now, isn't it? Which is just there's no human there. But actually having a human-looking face with eyes and smiling and nodding is a much more natural thing, even if it's still unnatural because it's not a real human. It's still more comfortable to do that.
Dementia is a worldwide problem. Now, I understand that you're also looking at people for whom English is not a first language.
Yeah, so you're right. The dementia is going to increase more rapidly in populations that are aging more quickly, like sub-Saharan Africa, South America, etc. In our first stage, we want to make sure people who speak English as a second language aren't biased against. There's no AI bias brought into this. So we've been working with the Israq Somali community in Sheffield and recruiting healthy volunteers from that group, and about to work with some South Asian community groups as well. If we show this works, then in the future, we'll be looking to translate it, but that requires quite a little bit of work to get us to that stage. So in the first stage, we want to make sure that it's suitable for as many people in the UK as possible, regardless of their backgrounds.
Yeah, and I guess, the home's up old can of worms, doesn't it, in terms of use of language. I understand, I don't know if I'm right saying this, but people tell me that there are certain cultures where there isn't a word for dementia. And it's a whole difficult thing then.
Absolutely. You're right. When we've spoken to the Somali population and other groups, that there's no word for dementia, that it's sort of synonymous with just mental health, you know, mentally ill. And therefore, there's greater stigma attached to that diagnosis. And similarly, in some cultures, it's thought of just as a normal part of aging, rather than there's been a disease and pathology there. So as we work with these groups, it's really important that we describe what Alzheimer's disease is, what dementia is, what the point of the memory clinic is, what's the point of the diagnosis, what's the support that comes with that, as well as how cognitive speak may fit into that in the future.
And in terms of rollout, when you've done the research, you've got the finished product, presumably this would be aimed at rolling out to the NHS in memory clinics?
Yeah, exactly. That's where this is going to sit in between primary and secondary care. And I think we've spoken to lots of GPs, psychiatrists, memory clinic nurses, and we're doing more feedback from the lots of memory pathways work slightly differently. We want to make sure cognitive speak can fit into those. But yeah, how can we use cognitive speak to improve the triage is essentially the simple question. And the second question is, if people are diagnosed with very early, can we use cognitive speak to manage them remotely so they can be safely monitored in their own home? And then if cognitive speak detects a change, they can say, look, come back in now, rather than come back in 6 months and you may not be any different, or come back in a year, you know, and giving that sense of reassurance to people so that they're under the clinic, they're being assessed, they're being looked after.
And I guess, you know, that's another that's an interesting area as well, because you're not saying to people, well, go away for 6 months, come back and we'll do the same again. Then we'll tell you what's going on. We're actually saying that once you get involved with us, we will keep an eye on you. And if we need to see you again and progress things, then, you know, we will do that.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the longitudinal follow-up is really important in this assessment to see that, you know, if we can show people are stable, that's going to increase the reassurance people are stable, and also is going to allow us to detect people who are deteriorating more quickly.
Now, you're in Sheffield. You know, I'm assuming there are people all over the world with a right on this, because it does seem a very innovative thing.
Yeah, the University of Sheffield have a press release about this, and we've had contacts from America and other countries about how we may run this out and test it in other sites. And we're keen to collaborate with people. We're keen for, and people can self-refer via our website at the moment to try it out and be a volunteer. And we're happy to be contacted about, you know, collaborating, working with people, because we want this to progress as quickly as possible.
The station that makes you feel good.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
You're in June with the D-Word podcast with my guest, Dr. Dan Blackburn from the University of Sheffield. We're talking about CognoSpeak, an exciting idea and one that's been recognised by a nomination for an innovation award.
It is really nice, yes. And the team went down. I think there was 150 applicants over 11 awards, and we were shortlisted one of 6. Unfortunately, we didn't win last week, but it was a really nice opportunity for our public patient involvement team from Devices for Dignity, the research champions from ISRAC, some other team went down, and our commercial partner in London all met up for the evening and saw other teams working together. So, and I think it's really nice that people are recognising what we're doing.
And I think it's nice as well. You know, I talk to a lot of researchers, I talk to a lot of people that are doing some great work, but sometimes that work tends to be in silos, and it's sometimes difficult to break out of that, you know, and use other people to just bounce ideas off.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree, isn't it? That we're all busy beaving away. It's nice to have that opportunity to speak to different people in different areas and making sure we're not missing anything.
And in terms of getting it out, I mean, I've heard the podcast that you did on it. And, you know, obviously we're now talking to you on this radio show. And I guess it's difficult to have that balance as well, isn't it? Because you're doing a lot of complicated work, takes up a lot of your time, but also you've got to get that work out there through some form of media outlets.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it is really important that we keep that message out there. So I think our website is much better than it was, and more people can understand and see what we're doing. And I think what's really important is the people who take part. We've now got a regular newsletter for people to update them how recruitment is going, how the research is going, because those people who volunteer do it out of a lot of goodwill and kindheartedness, you know, so they're really helping us. So it's really important we feedback to them where we are, what we've done, what we're up to now.
And you just fascinate me. If we go back to the beginning of the conversation when, you know, you said you studied Ronald Reagan 1980s, isn't it? We're looking probably 40 years ago now. And, you know, are there other people that look at that kind of situation and study speech like that and think, there could be something going on there?
Yeah, I think for a long time, people thought Alzheimer's disease didn't have a clear language, although this is data from Ronald Reagan and Iris Murdoch on her books, analysing how written word. And people were more interested in, you know, brain scans and that sort of research. But I think over the last few years, there's a lot more interest in language as a marker of Alzheimer's disease and a way of testing it non-invasively. So, yeah, there are other groups working in different countries around the world.
Because I think it's an interesting one. You know, I'm a sports fan. There have been a lot of links between various sporting activities, head injuries, etc. And I know that there is a lot of work in the NFL in the US, but they seem to stall on the fact that, well, actually, we need to do an autopsy after sadly someone's passed away. These kind of things that you're describing working on seem so important to me.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right, isn't it? It's going back 20 years where you couldn't diagnose Alzheimer's disease with certainty until someone had sadly died and you could look at the brain under the microscope. So I think access to specialist scans like PET scans have got some utility. You can look at the protein in the brain, but that's not scalable. But if we could show some of our techniques, correlate closely with those PET scans or the cerebrospinal fluid markers of the protein associated with Alzheimer's disease, then again, that's where we want to go to with this research. Say, look, we can show some really clear evidence using this non-invasive technology.
I guess it's kind of in its infancy a little bit in terms of research and what you're doing. Cast your mind forward 5 years. I mean, you know, where do you hope to be with all this, and what could the future look like?
Yeah, in 5 years' time, I would, you know, we've got another year and a half of this grant, and then we'll hopefully have another 2 or 3 year study. So at that stage, I'd hope we've got something that we are in the realms of running out in memory clinics in the NHS. It's in that sort of timeline that I'd hope. There's a lot of work as well as testing accuracy, as well as all the sort of regulatory frameworks that we need to go through. But I think we are getting good quality data already, and we just need to expand on that, make sure it's suitable for different memory clinics, make sure it's suitable for different populations in the UK over the next 3 or 4 years, and then hopefully in a position that this will be available to people who are presenting to memory problems to an NHS doctor or nurse.
And I think one of the, you know, the great things for people who are listening, I think for me would be if that joined together with the positives we've had with the drugs coming out, then that's a really big message going forward.
It's massive, isn't it? And I think it levels that playing field that there's no postcode lottery, which want to, you know, of access to doctor, because you've got these sorts of triage systems in place, so that everyone's got fair access to it. And therefore, the people who need the drugs that will hopefully have more licensed drugs by then can get the drugs in the time frame when they're going to be most effective.
And just to finish off, Dan, I mean, you know, we've gone forward, going back in terms of your career. When you started out on this, did you envisage this might happen, something like this, or, you know, kind of changes that you've seen?
Hard to know, isn't it? I remember, like, at medical school, I trained in Liverpool, and people always said to us in medical school, like, at least 50% of what you get taught will be wrong or will have changed in 20 years' time. And it's 20 years since I left medical school in 1998, 25 years. I didn't think we'd have as much of this sort of computerized system that could really help the triage and being able to having this computerized analysis of speech. I don't think I ever predicted that was going to happen. So it's really exciting to be working in it.
And it's been great talking to you, Dan. I've learned a lot. Hope the audience have learned a lot. And, you know, Cognos Speak sounds great. We've been doing this show since 2019. And it's kind of this year, I think, that I get the feeling, and I think a lot of my listeners get a feeling, that things are actually really moving forward now.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And it's really nice speaking to you. And I think it's a great show you've got. And it's lovely to be part of it.
Well, Dan, thank you very much. Hopefully we'll keep in touch and we can come back and chat to you in the fullness of time with how Cognos Speak has developed. Thanks a lot for being my guest.
Thanks very much.
Many thanks to Dan for introducing us to Cognos Speak, which really is a great idea. If you want to take a look, then go to the Cognos Speak website at cognospeak.co.uk. Well, that's all we have time for on this edition of the podcast. Thanks for listening, and I'll hope you'll join me again soon.